All right, back here on Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning. Today it's part two of our mailbag, answering some fun questions from you, the listeners, once again. This one's going to dive a little more into some of the shenanigans going on with the Cavs right now, some of the things facing the team going forward. I thank you guys for submitting questions as always. And want to thank you, by the way, for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, we're back. Part two of the Locked On Cavs mailbag. Again, we're recording this a little early, so if some context, some of these things have changed. My bad, but had to do this early for reasons. Evan, let's start. We're going to talk a lot today about the shooting guard position. We got a bunch of questions about that. And we got one question that was, I think it's maybe my favorite mailbag question we've ever gotten. So we're going to use that for two segments on today's show. But the first question comes from Positive Cavs Fan on Twitter, who asked, what will the Cavs do about the shooting guard position minutes with LeVert, Okoro, Obagi, and Sexton? And who is most likely to be the starting two to begin the season? That's and Dave GT5 on Twitter asked a similar question to this as well when we put out the call for questions. So the latter half of that to me is just like very hard to answer. Now, if I had to guess today, I would like probably just like guess LeVert. But like, do I feel good about that guess? No, I do not. No. I think like we need to get to training camp. We need to get to preseason games. We need to kind of see, like, there's a lot of stuff. Like, guys are in Vegas working out with the team. There's like a lot of things we don't see and stuff that we just like have to then ask about and like training camp stuff that as it happens, like when we can answer that question. I think the meat on this question is really about who gets minutes at the two. And I would just say this, don't think of this group. Look, you certainly want to have guys on the wing that maybe are like fit these roles as they exist, but like, you're having wings there. They're going to play the two and the three. Like, Markkanen's playing the three, obviously, but he'll play some four, and then you're going to play two of these guys at one time. Like, you could see LeVert and Okoro as a duo. You could see Okoro and Obagi as a duo. Sexton and one of the, and I think Okoro and Obagi can make some sense in terms of a stylistic fit if you want to go a little smaller on the wing and figure some of that out. I think just the nature of the Cavs roster, Evan, means that these guys are not just limited to playing the two. They may be like their ideal position, and you're trying to find some upgrades to get a guy who's 6'7 instead of one of these guys that fits this sort of parameter. But these guys are not just going to play the two. They're going to play, I think, in multiple spots just based on how the roster functions right now and who the Cavs actually have to fill minutes.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it does go down to how J.B. Bickerstaff doesn't necessarily assign 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or just any numerical value to his players. He kind of breaks them down as smalls, bigs, and I think wing players, again, hasn't elaborated much on just how he schematically lays players out. But I did do a poll on the wonderful site that is twitter.com, and like over almost 1,100 people voted, and it was a 32-32 tie between Obagi and Sexton for the starting two guard next year.
That feels like what Twitter would tell you too.
But I also said, so I also like preface with like, try, even though it's like, because it's hard to ignore what Obagi's doing during summer league. Like, the game against Charlotte, he was very good. And he has had a bit of a, he had a rough game two in summer league against Memphis, but like has looked good against Memphis, looked good against Detroit, looked good against Charlotte, and will look good against the 15. Preface, we're recording this before we know the 15 the Cavs are playing, but has looked solid. And I think, and then it was after that, it was LeVert who finished third, and then Okoro who finished fourth. And I think just with how multifaceted and different some of these players are, like, I think you have to find avenues to play all these guys. And we talked about this with like rotation breakdown stuff, but unless your name's Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, because we have to say Evan Mobley because there's two Mobleys on the roster now, or Jared Allen, it's probably going to be an open contest for starting spots on this roster, or just spots in this rotation in general. And the battle at the two guard position is going to be a very interesting one to watch happen, because like you said, Chris Fedor has reported this several times, you and I have heard this too, like people have just said this, like the assumption is going into next season like Caris LeVert will be the starting two guard, so maybe he's penciled in as the starting two guard heading into camp. But I feel like J.B. Bickerstaff's going to have an open competition between LeVert, Sexton, Okoro, Obagi, because one, healthy competition is a good thing because it just maximizes the potential of your roster, and also it helps you figure out like guys you may want to be playing over other guys too, or maybe guys who are more ready and equipped for what you're looking for in the moment. But at the same time, whoever ends up winning that competition is probably the best ideal fit next to Darius Garland, because you can make an argument for all four of those players too, but you're realistically finding the guy that you pair next to Garland to make his life easier, to relieve some of the defensive pressure he faces. And also, if you're being cognizant of it, if, like, let's say you start a Okoro, if Obagi ends up being, like, a very, very good defender, we haven't got to see much of it during summer league play because the Cavs kind of force him to switch off players quite often. Like, they're running a very switch-heavy defense in summer league, but he makes sense. LeVert, in theory, just as a quote-unquote bigger wing who still plays 2-3, makes sense too. And then, like, Sexton, we know that song and dance. It's not pretty defensively, but, like, offensively, ideally is Garland's best backcourt partner right now, just in terms of familiarity and offensive thunder and lightning dynamic that they kind of run together. So that's just kind of what you have to factor in and think about. It's an interesting thought exercise, and I think it's just going to be something I'm going to be watching very closely when camp rolls around in, like, mid to late September.
Yeah, I think the other thing about this that is worth learning is, like, this is going to, I think, evolve as the season goes on, because, number one, the who can play the two and the three is going to be different with Howell Nato versus what I think they're hoping to have with Ricky Rubio. The two guards over the Ricky Rubio that really worked last year is going to push these guys to the three if they're going to stay on the floor. That's just going to be part of bringing Rubio back. But that's not going to be the case until, like, let's just say January. So there's more minutes for them to suss some of this out the first half of the year, while Nato, who's a 6'1 guard, who I don't think you're going to play a lot of two guard stuff with, is an option. So, like, I think this answer is just going to change as we go on, and you're going to see probably some riding of hot hands. You're going to see, I would expect, part of the early feeling out process will be seeing what pairings work and what doesn't. Like, you know, does, you know, LeVert work well with one guy versus the other? Does Obagi work well with another? Again, this just assumes Colin Sexton is back. Like, if he's not back and they go a different way with that, then this changes this question, and this is maybe less of a crunch for minutes at this spot. But if he's back, you're then figuring some stuff out, and then I think you're trying to figure out what that manages, and maybe that means, like, he has to play someone and Neto gets pushed out of the rotation a little bit. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that, as we're looking about this, that feels sort of like a very just, like, let's throw darts at a dartboard and let's see what sticks, and then, like, it's gonna change as we go on. And again, I really, really believe when we're answering this question, Rubio's return and how that is managed will have, like, that is just going to shape minutes at the two in a large way, I think. Okay, let's go into break. Well,
one last point. Yeah. I think people who are maybe wringing their hands based on reports out there that Obagi may not crack this rotation entirely, that just feels a little premature just because it's July and you can't take much stock in summer league play. I think we'll have a clear idea when preseason rolls around. That's just the only thing I want to preface, is really, like, when we include him in this conversation and whatnot. But I think it's just going to honestly be an open competition. Like you said, the Neto factor is a thing too, the Rubio factor, like the three guards, the three position is going to be interesting as well. Like, if Jetty Osman is here for training camp, that's interesting. Like, is he even going to be in the rotation, or is he going to have to play just because the Cavs are so barren at depth at that spot? Like, there's a lot of different factors at play, and a lot of it does start and end on who is starting and playing at the two for the Cavs.
Yeah, and look, the other part about this that I think it's worth understanding about you is, like, if he's playing kind of how he is in summer league, that guy is pushing for minutes, and that will, that guy provides something they desperately need.
Provide shooting on the perimeter and also just at the wing position, which is something the Cavs have sorely lacked for quite a bit now.
Yes. All right. After the break, we're gonna start talking about, again, what I think is the best mailbag question we've ever gotten, and we'll dive into this. Okay. Right after this. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you're depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And guess what? There's a new flavor. Ready? It's delicious, indulgent cookie dough covered in chocolate. That's right. Built has done it again. Let me introduce you to your new favorite. That's the cookie dough chunk puffs. They have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. They're only 160 calories with a whopping 15 grams of protein in them. Run to Built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It'll be the perfect treat. They sent us some, can verify that they're excellent, and you can find them in a hiding place in your house if you just want to hoard them for yourself, if you're that kind of person. Like all Built Bars, the new cookie dough chunk Built Puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. Chocolate covered cookie dough with a light, fluffy texture. They're excellent. And what's great about Built is that all of their bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. So go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off your order for the Cookie Dough Chunk Puff or any of their other amazing Built bars for a workout, for a late night treat, or just a quick protein snack. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off your order at Built.com. Grab yourself a Built bar. All right, question here today is from at It's815 on Twitter, who asks, besides Evan Mobley, what player on the Cavs roster would push this team to new height if they made a massive leap next year from what they were last year? So Evan Mobley, I think taking Evan Mobley off of this, and then I think what I'm going to do, we're going to do in segment three, Evan, is we're going to talk about what a Mobley leap could provide, because I think it is part of this discussion. So that'll be in segment three. We're going to dive into, like, let's insert Evan Mobley back into this and see what that, and kind of see where, like, that could take us into, like, the multiverse of Cavs stuff. I think this question's hard to answer because, like, Darius Garland Darius Garland just took a really massive leap. I don't think you're getting a massive leap from Kevin Love. I don't think you're getting a massive leap from Larry Markkanen. Jared Allen, like, kind of took an underrated leap last year. Like, I think you're more hoping that, like, some of the the Jared Allen thing is you're hoping that stays consistent. You're hoping that is the case. Your Caris LeVert is what he is at this point. So I think this leads me to two guys. And there will be massive in different ways. And they are Isaac Okoro and Colin Sexton. Those are my two answers to this.
My two answers are Darius Garland and Isaac Okoro. Because Garland hit a new high that none of us saw coming, and this is just going to be the crux of my argument. Does he have fuel in the tank to sustain that level of play and then hit another level on top of that? Because the Cavs clearly invested in him and believe in him as their franchise guard. And I think he's more than shown it in this one season that he had, this in his third, like, leap breakout year. But can he sustain that level of play? And then obviously, like, you want to build upon that, become more efficient, become more impactful in terms of playmaking, limit your turnovers, like, so many, stay healthy. I think that's a key thing too. Like, there's so many things that Garland could do to make an impact. Maybe he has more of, like, a Jared Allen leap where it's not, like, super nuclear ascension, but, like, you see him hit, like, a fifth or sixth gear that you maybe didn't expect him to have in him right away. And that just kind of changes the entire formula and changes, like, what we perceive Darius Garland can or cannot be. It's just, that's who I'm thinking of. Let's talk about Okoro, though. So,
well, I think the Garland point is fair. I wonder how, like, my question, I guess, would be, like, how much does that leap, like, truly change the trajectory? Or does it just, like, kind of get, like, is that going to push them up? I guess, my question there. The Okoro thing, I think, is just, like, I think he's just, like, a good defender, and he's, like below average on offense. But if, like, he just goes from, like, below average on offense to, like, hey, this guy's not getting, like, socially distanced from when he's standing in the corner and is, like, comfortable shooting threes, and he's attacking closeouts as teams start rotating towards him and stuff. And, like, some of the mini playmaking stuff we've seen from him in very small spurts happens. He makes plays in transition. Like, if just, like, that dial gets turned enough where you're just, like, this guy is playable and his defense remains good, like, and that guy's just, like, a competent wing player for you, that's just, like, such a glaring hole in this roster that I'm just, like, we may not attribute, like, a bunch of the Cavs' success to him directly. It will just make them so much more solid and, like, have less weaknesses to worry about as they get into, like, basketball that matters in theory, like April and stuff. Like, if he's just a dude, that just, like, really kind of makes your roster make a lot more sense if that just happens.
Well, it definitely makes them more fully functional on both ends of the floor because, like you said, Okoro is their best perimeter defender. I think he has the ability to defend 1-4 at this point. And, like, he has shown you a couple things in offense where, like, there's moments where you see it all click for Isaac. You're like, okay, yeah, I can see how he functions, where if he tightens up his hand a little bit more, like, yeah, that's going to be the next aspect of his game. But he serves as a cutter. There's times where, like, he's not the most confident three-point shooter, but, like, it's not a complete liability in his game. But there's times where you see those flashes, but you've yet to see him kind of put all those pieces together. And to be fair, He did enter the league in unprecedented circumstances. He entered during COVID NBA bubble situation where everything was just different and odd, and player development doesn't really exist in those situations because coaches can't get close to players and players really can't get close to other players. Like, yeah, they're doing like 5-on-5 drills and stuff, but like they're still trying to maintain safety during the peak of the pandemics. But I have said this before and I'll say it again, like this is probably going to be the make or break season for Isaac. Like I'm trying to figure out how I'll ask this during media day so it just doesn't get shut down with like Kobe laughing at it or something, but I'm like, or even JB, we're like, oh, we think Isaac's great the way he is, but like what do you need from him as a player to round out and complete this rotation? Because it's true, teams will disrespect him on the perimeter where they will have defenders sag off him and then form a wall to frustrate Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, and also make life harder for Colin Sexton or Caris LeVert as cutters or slashers, and then also harder for Darius Garland just to try and drive in the lane and maybe kick out to a guy on the perimeter. If that guy on the perimeter is Okoro, you don't feel confident that that's going in. So Okoro is really just like a factor where if he shows that, like, hey, I am average to slightly above average offensively, where like I know what my role is. Like I think he knows what his role is. He is learning how to play off ball. He said that like that's a hard part of his second season in the league, is learning how to play mostly off ball at this point. But having him cut along the baseline is obviously like a bread and butter play that has worked for the Cavs with him. I think maybe him becoming a more reliable shooter is something that could have definitely help him. But also the handle stuff, like I think point of Okoro is a fallacy. Like I don't think that's ever going to work.
No.
But if you had him act as like a secondary creator or a secondary shot creator for everybody else in the offense, where like he can drive to the basket and kick out to somebody, or he can run functional pick and rolls with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen or Kevin Love and Larry Markkanen and pop scenarios instead, like that bolsters things for the Cavs and really changes the dichotomy of things offensively too. And also just for him as a player personally, that changes his financial futures as well too, because teams might, and Cleveland included, might warm up to paying him more of the money that he might think he's worth versus what kind of how everyone feels about him now, because like you said, he's below average offensively, and there's moments it clicks, but it's so few and far between that you really can't say like, okay, these are the 3-4 things Isaac Okoro is very good at offensively that he has in his bag of tricks that he can lean on a night-to-night basis.
Before we go to break and switch to Evan Mobley, my case for Colin Sexton in this is just,
lay it on me, King.
If he comes in next year and like his game is shifted in a way that kind of accentuates what worked last year, and it's not Colin trying to fully imprint himself on that, and like you see him bombing threes at a higher clip, and maybe there's more effort on defense and he cuts more, and like that, and these specific parts of his game get turned up, and then some of the stuff that makes him obviously really interesting, but is also like kind of where the fit questions I think come from, as much as the size question comes into it.
Yeah,
that could be such a useful player, and it's like the argument for like him being more useful to them to Caris LeVert next year. I don't know how likely it is. Like some of this is just like I have no film or data or anything from last year that really tells me how to feel about this one way or the other. That is just I kind of where I go to, and I'm just like maybe that's our answer, and it's staring us in the face. If you get a leap out of Colin Sexton that allows him to kind of accentuate what worked, and you can cover for him because you have this defensive infrastructure, and it'll take time to figure out. But like there's a path to me where that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Do the Cavs believe that's the case? Is that how he wants to play? Like, there's a lot of like things that will impact that answer, but that's it. All right, let's go to break.
Well, just one more thing to your Sexton point. I think it's easier for the Cavs to get him more acclimated to how they do things offensively because Cleveland has had a full 84 games this season of what they're trying to build. And I think this the on-court chemistry between Garland, Mobley, and Allen helps a lot. And then figuring in these plug-and-play pieces like Sexton probably makes it a little bit easier. Maybe you don't see, like, as dramatic of a drop-off as you did in those 11 games Sexton played last year. Like, I think he's going to be interesting. It depends if he's back or not. That's just because I assume he will be, but until he is, like, I can't firmly say, like, yeah, he's going to be the dude who can take a leap.
What does he want?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. What does he want? Like, he has a very defined play style, and people crucify me for him, like, shooting more like Gary Trent Jr., but not even that, just maybe like if he takes 4 or 5 three-pointers a game, it's going to make his life so much easier on offense. It also make the Cavs' life so much easier on offense, because Collin's a very good shooter, and I wish he would lean more on that instead of kind of what he knows and just driving to the basket and getting that just bit of the blinders and tunnel vision he has.
Yeah, all right, after the break, let's talk about Evan Mobley and what a leap for him could mean for the Cleveland Cavaliers. All right, last segment on Locked On Cavs, last segment of this two-parter mailbag. Thanks to everyone who sent in some excellent questions. Evan Mobley.
Thank you, Chris, for coordinating it.
I mean, this is what I do, is I need to have sheets of questions in front of me so my brain can function. Evan Mobley is very clearly the answer to this if we were going to give the whole roster of, like, who takes the biggest leap? This is the dude that will drive them. And I think specifically, like, it's an offensive leap. If Evan Mobley takes some kind of notable offensive leap, creation-wise, scoring-wise, shooting-wise, like one or two of those, like, I think, not to be greedy, but, like, you know, some of these other things. Like, I don't know what it'll be. We'll see kind of what he says he's worked on and what the focus is and what the team is looking for from that. But, like, if Evan Mobley goes from being kind of like he was a very good defensive player last year and a very impactful player as a result. The offense was come and go a little bit. There were some really good. There were some really bad. Times where you're like, oh, like he can actually post up better than I thought. There's times he got stonewalled and didn't have any moves in the post. There's like a lot of give and take there. If Evan Mobley takes a massive offensive leap and you're just like, oh my God, this guy is providing us a ton on offense in addition to his defense, like, that guy can make your team ceiling a lot higher, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And if there's guys you hope maybe he's studying, like, who are elite prospects but were kind of raw and flawed offensively, like, maybe if he bulks up a bit more, like, he studies guys like Giannis, who learns how to play with physicality and play through contact and just kind of, like, when you said he got stonewalled, but learn how to, like, push back on that a little bit. And I think obviously the grind of an 82 plus game season has certainly opened his eyes to what he needs to change, and just in terms of his diet and just weight training and everything else. But maybe, because we talk about how he could be a three-point shooter, if you look at his brother, who is a three-point shooter at this point in college and at times during summer league, but Evan Mobley could be a big who stretches that eventually, but I don't think that needs to be the primary focus of his game. And if they just rely on him as an offensive hub in terms of playmaking, great. I think that's a wonderful idea. I think you need to get more creative with your looks using him as an offensive hub, but that's also more on the coaching staff than me just banging my fist at the desk. But if he studies a little bit of, like, that's just that Giannis tape a little bit, just to kind of figure out, like, hey, how can I handle physicality in this league? How can I use my strength and God-given abilities to get to the basket with explosion and force? And at the same time, because if he's able to kind of just create so much overwhelming rim pressure, it's going to open up so much space on the rest of the floor for his teammates who, like, let's say Okoro hopefully has that leap shooting-wise. Like, he's a factor. Darius Garland's a factor. Colin Sexton's floating out there. Ochai Agbaji, in theory, but he's probably going to need time to adjust, will benefit from this. Jared Allen, if he's, let's say Mobley's getting double-teamed at the elbow or something like that, like, Jared Allen can benefit from this too, because he'll have more of a clear landing space in the paint as well. Like, there's different ways that Mobley can do this, and I think it's just him learning how to play more physically and also just bulking up. Like, he was very small for his position, how the Cavs utilized him. And that's just kind of what we both agreed on towards the end of the season, is, like, he needs to bulk up a little bit just to handle the rigors and physicality of the position and kind of what the Cavs are asking him to do right now offensively.
Yeah, I would say if we're looking at two areas on the floor where I'm curious to see what he looks like in year two, number one, around and then a little bit outside of the elbows, they ran a fair amount of stuff last year with him where he'd fake a DHO and he'd either drive or create or look to pass. Like, does he make different reads out of that? Is he more effective just kind of bullying to the rim in those situations? Does he have a pull jumper in those situations? I think that's something you'll see, because it allows you to use Garland in a certain way. It allows you to use, you know, that's maybe a place where he could develop some chemistry with Agbaji. That's a place where he could develop some chemistry with Sexton. Like, there's a lot you could do with that that I think leads him to having the ball in his hands and creating and making plays out of stuff. I think especially if you're going to play him at the five, there's some really interesting lineups you could put together where it's like him and like a bunch of shooters, and like I just think that could be like really, really good offensive for the Cavs, and you bank on him being your defensive anchor in the situation. I think that's like a fair gamble to make if it's like him and Love and let's say Agbaji and Rubio too. And Sexton. Let's just take those five, just throwing them out there. There's so much you could do at that I think could make a ton of sense if you lean into some of his DHOs, the decision-making aspect of his game, and letting him do that stuff. The other part I would say is on the post-ups they'll do with him are not like throw him the ball at the block and like let him just bang. It is like a little bit stretched out. It's on the baseline. He will sometimes take that baseline jumper, but does that get extended out a little bit? Does that become like a corner three? Does that become a place where there's creation that comes out of that? Because it's a lot of right now, like, it feels like when you watch him, he is so long and has good instincts and is skilled enough already where, like, he can drive into guys that are not, like, it's not, this isn't going to happen against, like, Giannis or, like, the best defenders in the world in a playoff series. But on, like, a night-to-night basis, he has shown an ability against some centers and some bigs to drive into them, and his size and his length and his feel a lot and his footwork allows him to get off shots, and he makes shots, and it's just like, I don't know what you do with that. He's just an alien, all that stuff. But if it hits a level where he's like hitting a pull-up jumper, or it's like there's a little more bulk to it, whatever those in those two spots to me, if those evolve in a notable way and like that leads to passing or whatever, like that's a dude that's just gonna raise your offensive floor from being like kind of a offensive team to like maybe not like great, but like I think above average. Could be realistic.
I think that's realistic too, and I want to ask you this as we kind of close up shop for this fun mailbag mega episode we did, but broke up the two parts, Avi. But are you expecting this shot of his to kind of come to fruition early into his sophomore season, or do you think it's going to be more of like a long-term project of something you're observing, maybe something he's working on? Because I think realistically, like, you hear a lot of big guys say it. Like, I know Tristan Thompson said it tongue-in-cheek, but a lot of big guys say it. Like, this is a league where big men are able to gravitate out to the perimeter and they aren't a liability out there because a traditional back-to-the-basket big who crashes the glass and rebounds doesn't work. I mean, you see Andre Drummond try to do it with the Cavs for a while because I think he realized, like, hey, I'm a dinosaur in terms of what a player is. How can I maximize my opportunities? Like, do you think Mobley will try to like add this to his game right away, or do you think there's other aspects of his game he needs to focus on first, but like slowly but surely start to expand his range? So maybe like entering year three, we're saying like, okay, maybe this is the year that Mobley starts to really drift out towards the perimeter, and like, or he's like a trailer in fast break scenarios where like Garland like crashes into like Sexton sprinting on the fast break and kicks it out to Mobley as a trailer. Like, do you think that's more realistic, or do you think it's going to be more immediate?
I would say if we're looking at next year, it is, let's see how he handles the situations where he does get the ball on the perimeter. Does he take a pull up? Okay. Does he, like, what does he do in those situations? And like, is there a clear catch and shoot opportunity where we see him fire? I don't think like he's ever necessarily going to be a dude who's like self creation three stuff, but I think trailer is also a good spot to hit on that, because like, I kind of think like if you're, this is never going to be ideal. And like, if he's the five, just have him run to the rim and like catch a lob and that's fine. But if it's him and Allen, like him as a trailer could open up some stuff on the fast break. It can make you more dangerous if a team is able to cut off Allen on the fast break, or if like Okoro was or Agbaji are kind of going down the sidelines and they get cut off, right? Like if a team defends that well and like he's your trailer and they lose track of him, like that's an area where you could see it. I'm curious to see, Evan, how, if there's opportunities where it's like very clear he could take a three and like, hey, the ball flowed this way to me, kind of way where like it's swinging my way. We ran our initial stuff, but now we're just kind of figuring out what's going on here. Or if a trailing situation, if he takes them then, and what that, if that's a point. And this is again something I would like to ask, because if we go back to the beginning of the offseason, the first training clip we saw of him was taking a pull up like a three as the spacer on a pick and roll where a guy was diving to the rim. Now certainly, we could look at the Cavs roster and say, huh, this seems like it's on purpose because you have a guy who's not going to shoot threes for you, who's not the playmaker you are, who's going to roll to the rim and dunk.
Okay, I see what you're talking about now. Okay, I was trying to think of who is the ball.
There's a certain guy with an afro who was an all-star last year who rolls to the rim and dunks really well, who you want to space off of. And if you're working on that, that feels intentional to me. That
Well,
that
in theory was the clip also... We saw. it's not tenable in the modern NBA to have two bigs that are completely bound to the paint either. If you want to start 2 7-footers, one of them has to get comfortable
or three,
I guess that's true as well. But like, one is already a streaky enough shooter, but like, one guy has the potential to be one, and I just don't think Jared Allen has it in his game, even though Allen has also joked that bigs are taking more threes today, and he needs to add that more to his skill set as well. But
Allen post-ups now, and like, that's enough for me. It's like, he did his part. I think even the way I'll frame this is, Jared Allen did his part by adding the post-up stuff into his game and the little bit of creation stuff out of those post-ups. Adding
Robin Lopez, this is the X factor. He can be in Mobley and Allen's ear with, like, listen, here's how you become a threat, where it's not Splash Mountain like my brother, but it's a step below that, a Splash Matterhorn, which is much bigger than a mountain. But either way, I'm just thinking of rides at Disney.
It's like the Mine Train and not like a Splash. It's like
I don't know. They're rebranding all the rides. The Guardians of the Galaxy ride at Epcot. Let's just call it that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I will be curious. I guess, Evan, is there if you were gonna tell me, Evan Mobley, if you got to, like, I just want to, we'll end in this. If you got to pick one way he improves and just you got to see what that offered the Cavs, would you pick him being kind of more functional as like a creator out of those situations where it's like DHOs and stuff, or is it the shooting? If you could pick one.
Creation out of DHOs and shooting, because I think.
No, I'm saying which one? You get to pick one. So you get to pick he's like better passing, better self-creation out of DHOs and stuff.
I think the passing, the self-creation is just would do more for the Cavs, especially with how they maybe want to function. And you saw it at times with him like try to be like the initiator at the top of the key with Allen like crashing or diving to the basket. Like, if you get him a little more comfortable doing that, because I think Mobley does have the vision and skill set, I think that's something that's more tangible for next season. But if the shooting becomes a thing, I'm all on board on it. But I'm going to be a little skeptical until I see him looking more comfortable. Like you said, like, that's going to be like an early observation point where, like, if Evan Mobley's just on the perimeter, like the ball floats to him on the perimeter, does he take that shot, or does he pass it to somebody else, or does he try to drive to the basket or something?
Yeah. I'll put it this way for me. I don't think him having to shoot and like make threes at like an average clip even is a prerequisite for him to be great on offense. I think the creation is going to be a prerequisite for him to be great on offense.
I think that's fair. I think that's it. Good place to wrap it up. Folks, what do you think in the comments below? Let us know. And if you are watching us on YouTube, there's probably a good chance you're not subscribed, so make sure you're subscribed before you close out of this episode as well.
Yeah, please do. We'll be back Wednesday or Thursday of this week, probably maybe with the latest on Colin Sexton. As we're the day we recorded this two-parter mailbag, they're listening to part two of the DeAndre Ayton thing happened, and maybe that'll loosen up the market a little bit, but we will see. I don't know. DeAndre Ayton got a lot of money.
It's going to be Kevin. Also, probably the first one to fall. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, everyone, be well. Check out Locked On NBA. Check out Locked On Suns. Check out Locked On Pacers.
Check out Caitlin Cooper's latest on DeAndre Ayton's fit with the Pacers. It was really good.
It was very good. Caitlin's great. Until next time, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Be well.